This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Later on, we'll hear from an indigenous Colombian leader in the U.S. to testify against President Uribe's government policies.
But first, a victory for all New York City delivery workers occurred when 36 employees of the Saigon Grill restaurants, after more than 1.5 years of battling with its owners, Simon and Michelle Njet, were awarded $4.6 million for federal and state labor law violations.
The 36 worked at the Saigon Grill restaurants until they were fired March 2007 in retaliation for organizing a union and planning to bring a lawsuit against the owners.
Now the district court finally serves justice to Saigon Grill restaurant delivery workers with Saigon Grill workers and Josephine Lee, coordinator of the Justice Will Be Served campaign and representative of the Chinese Staff and Workers Association. So specifically, we have Josephine Lee and Ki Iguan and Feng Si Sai. And also with us are Lian Chi Hua. First of all, congratulations. How nice it is to be able to open the show with this.
Thank you very much for having us today. We're all very excited.
Why don't we go back to, first of all, the conditions that people experienced that led to their organizing efforts towards organizing a union and towards subsequently the lawsuit?
I started working at this restaurant at
1998.
I worked in the Saigon Grill more than 10 years. In this past 10 years, the boss, Simon, he used all different kinds of techniques to retaliate against the workers. Doesn't matter about the working condition, the wage condition, and also the safety condition of the workers. They are very bad and worse. The reason why we came out
through
the Chinese media, we found out that we have the right to fight for what we deserve. That's how we talk to all the workers, and then should we come out and fight?
就是所有的工友都同意，就是我们组织去组织工会站出来，去向老板讨回这个就是公平的待遇。
And that's how we organize all the workers, everybody willingly to come out to fight.
就是最低工资和合理的工作环境。
To fight for the minimum wage that we deserve and also the safe working condition that we also deserve.
Let's be a bit more specific about the minimum wage. How much were you getting? How much did you deserve? And when you say safe working conditions, what exactly do you mean about that?
While I was working in Saigon Grill, the unsafety condition will be when we are delivering food to unsafe neighborhoods and also the safety condition of the cars, traffic, and everything. The boss has paid me $1.60 an hour when I was working in Saigon Grill.
Wait a minute, $1.60 an hour?
Yes, $1.60 an
hour. $1.60 an hour.
Yes.
Goodness. Mm.
When we are working, even though if we are very sick, he doesn't care about whether you're sick or not. The only thing that is to come to work. And if you're really sick that, and also you're very tired that you can't make it to work, you have to take out money from your own pocket to hire somebody else that you know to come and substitute your position.
就是说我在里面做工的时候，我在这十年里面就是在里面工作的时候，就是说我做的工是半天的工，他的工资会比全天多一点，一个钟头是2块多。
In the past 10 years, I've been working in Saigon Grill. I was working as a part-time worker, and my wages are a little bit higher than the full-time workers, which is about
$2.20.
During the time when I was working in there, when you are sick or when you get hurt, they don't care what happened. They want you to come into work. The most is if after one day you don't come in, then you're fired. They will find somebody else to substitute you.
而且就是说下雪天、下雨天或者温度在25度以下，就是说你们都要，不管你们有没有就是有休息的人或者生病的人，你们都要进来加班。
And if it's a very heavy snow day or heavy rain day or very cold day, as long as the temperature is under 25 degrees, it doesn't matter if you are off that day or whatever. All the delivery men have to report to work.
但是十年来就是我没有加过一份工资，也没有拿过一份的加班费。
During the 10 years I was working in Saigon Grill, I never had a raise and never had overtime wages been paid to me.
How many hours are we speaking about roughly?
大概一天如果说做的话是做几个小时 ?12 hours.
12 hours a day?
12 hours a day.
How many days a week?
六天半。
Six and a half days.
Six and a half days, 12 hours. Wow.
Yes.
就是我们好像如果被遇到抢劫的什么就是他老板或者就是工商方面的老板从来就不赔钱了。
Let's say if we get robbed, the boss doesn't care about if we get hurt or not, or what happened. First thing he will ask is, give me back all my money.
除了老板不负这个责任之外，他还教我们就是说你们用假的名字，就说这样就不会，这笔钱就不会到你们的头上。
And the bosses has teach them that if you really do get hurt on the job, don't report your real name so you could avoid the doctor bill.
I also understand that there were fines that were being charged against the workers on top of this for what?
是在里面是罚有三种罚款的方法，就是
inside the restaurant there was three ways of penalize the workers.
50块和200块的罚款。
$200 fine, $50 fine, and $20 fines.
就是20块是好像我们就是之前就是按电脑单，好像送单送出去，这个电脑单超过时间忘记按了，就是说我们要罚款20块。
The restaurant is computerized. Every order comes in. If it's your turn to deliver and you don't punch in the computer, that's $20 fine.
就是50块是我们出入的那个，就是外卖出入的那个门，它有点坏了，所以它如果关的时候，如果你不用手轻轻去关的话，它会发出很大的声音。
And also, they have a separate entrance for the delivery men to get the orders in and out, and that door is a little broken. If it's windy or everything, if the door slams, that's $50 fine.
而且我们这个门就是我们送外卖的，每天要出入一个人要出入这个，起码要最少要几十次，不可能每天每一个就是时间去记的，好像轻轻关这个门。
And there's no way, because we've been going through that door at least 20 or 30 times a day. How can we remember to close the door very quietly at each time?
所以如果好像是忘记了，就是这个门会发出很大的声音，那我们就要罚款50块。
And sometimes when we forget and the door just happens to slam, then we have to be fined for $50.
就是200块是这样子，就是我们送出去外卖送出去的时候，如果客人是催单，他我们就要罚款200块。
And the $200 fine is, I believe everybody have been ordered delivery before, and everybody has call in to the restaurant to check on your orders before, okay? And that's what happened. When a customer call in to the restaurant and to check on your orders or rush the orders, then that the delivery man had to be fined for $200 because they were late.
I'm aghast. So obviously, folks began organizing, and yet it isn't so obvious how people under these conditions began the organizing process, and similarly how they hooked up with the Chinese Staff and Restaurant Workers Association and the Justice Will Be Served campaign. How did you all get together?
我们当初是通过报纸看到就是318工会就是这个组织，这华人职工会就是出面就是帮送外卖的人争取这个权利，所以我们去找318工会。
In the beginning, we started to find out through the Chinese newspaper what the Chinese Staff Workers Association has been done to help the workers to fight their justice. That's how we got to them, and that's how we got involved.
Before all these changes in Midtown, there was already like a foundation that was laid in Chinatown where restaurant workers had been fighting against tip stealing. So in Chinatown, we saw that the hours were shortened from 70 to 40 hours a week. People got paid more and had more time to spend with their family and more time to take care of their health. It was because of organizing across different shops and different trades that people were able to get these larger industry-wide changes. I think when the Saigon Grill struggled throughout these past 1.5 years, inspired so many people to come out and really pitch in. And sometimes we were on the picket line twice a day for 5 days a week in the beginning. And this, for the picket line to still be sustained up to this point, really required all the participation of so many delivery workers from around the city. city and also from community members, from students. Only in that way, actually, conditions in the industry have really been transformed in such a short time.
Just to back up for a second, after the organizing, what did you do as part of the organizing process and what did the boss do?
就是我们开始组织的时候，就是我老板他知道了这件事情。
After we start organizing, after the boss has found out,
是他要我们就是全体人员就是送外卖的人。
They want all the delivery men to have a meeting.
要我们签一份就是很不公平的合约。
They want us to sign a very unfair contract with the boss.
就是这份合约上就是说它是中英文的。
This contract is consists of English and Chinese.
他要我们在上面签字，就是说从明天开始他会加我们的工资。
They want all the workers to agree to the term that starting the next day, I will start increasing all your wages.
但是要我们放弃，就是前面就是好像去追他那个最低工资，不要去告他。
But ask the workers to give up their rights to pursue the wages that the boss has owed to them before.
因为我们认为就是说这个合约就是很不合理。
Because we think this contract is really unfair.
所以我们就拒绝了。
That's why we all turned it down.
就因为我们不在这个上面合约上签字，他就不会当天就把我们全部。
And that's why the boss has fired all 36 of us at that day because we're not willing to sign the false contract.
Maybe now to the good part, if you will. So we've all these outrages, all these terrible things, and a year and a half of struggle, relentless picketing and organizing. The lawsuit was filed by the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund, and now let's revel in this remarkable federal lawsuit where you have gotten your just desserts, or they have, the
just
owners.
Just desserts.
Just desserts,
okay.
Literally. You have prevailed. Tell us about the lawsuit.
我们现在就是有两个就是挺高兴的，第一个就是今年是 2月份，就是那个全国劳工关系局有一个判决下来。
There is two things that we really want to celebrate. First thing is in February of 2008, we just got a decision from the National Labor Relations Board.
就是要求老板就是请当天就是被炒掉的所有送外卖的人全部回去复工。
To ask the bosses to rehire all the workers that he fired that day.
并要求就是赔偿他们就是在这一段时间的损失。
The boss is also required to be responsible for all the back pay that the workers has lost since the day of firing.
还有一个就是前几天，就是还有一个就是上个礼拜，就是我们民事联邦法院有一个判决下来。
Another thing that we will celebrate on is the decision that we got from last week from the federal court that we won the federal lawsuit.
就是他判决就是老板严重的违反了就是纽约和联邦法律。
The decision is that the bosses has committed unfair labor practices and also violated the labor law.
就是严重剥削了工人的就是生存权利。
And heavily exploit the workers.
没有就是给予合法的工资。
Didn't provide minimum wage.
没有给他们就是保障到人身安全。
Didn't provide the overtime wages and also didn't care about the workers' safety.
就是所以联邦法院现在判决就是老板必须负全部的责任。
Therefore, the federal court has ruled that the bosses have responsible to pay for all that damages.
联邦法院现在他们判老板就是必须付三十几个送外卖的人，就说要460万。
The judge has ruled that the boss has to pay all 36 workers the sum of $4.6 million.
Wow.
That sounds good.
Sounds good.
That was not just the back wages, but there was also a penalty on that, right?
Yeah, it includes back wages and also liquidated damages. But I think in general, during the course of the hearing, the judge found all of the defendants or the boss's arguments to be false. You know, because the workers spoke the truth the entire time, then, you know, they were able to win such a great victory. And so legally, that includes minimum wage, overtime, also the fines that they were charged, and also the kickbacks that also the boss had taken during the course of their employment there.
What are the implications of this for the industry? There are thousands upon thousands of delivery workers in the city that have faced similar kinds of conditions. What are the implications now for people who have similarly been in a horrendous situation, such as our brothers here?
It definitely sends a message to all workers, people in the delivery industry, but also all workers. And it shows that if you dare to fight and dare to organize and come together, then there's all the possibility to win. We've already seen conditions be transformed in the industry already. Delivery workers in the restaurant industry used to be like in the bottom rung of the ladder, and the boss used to treat them the worst. Traditionally, people think that if you don't know English or if you don't have skills, then you know you can't come together and organize. But now we're seeing this movement that's really led by non-English speaking immigrant workers, but then also they're coming together documented and undocumented to fight a lot of these common conditions. And despite a lot of like the limitations in the law, we've seen that conditions have really been transformed.
And what's the next project?
We still face some challenges. Ke Yiguan, you know, was saying before that the National Labor Relations Board, they issued an injunction demanding the boss to reinstate all the workers. But since then, the boss has not hired back all of the workers who are supposed to be reinstated. And so we are still continuing to call for a boycott. We're still continuing to picket in front of the restaurant until all workers are reinstated. But, you know, what we're seeing now is that the few workers who have been reinstated, the boss still continues to retaliate against these workers. And so every chance that he gets, he's going to try to find a way to divide the workers and using different methods. And, you know, whether it's using the immigration law to divide working people or through other methods. But that's why now it's even more important time than ever for workers to come out and organize. And right now we're continuing to see as the, you know, economy gets worse and the rich are becoming richer, the poor are becoming poorer. There's more and more workers who are coming out. This gives them a really hopeful message that anything can change if people come together.
And how can people get in touch with your organization?
To get in touch with us, you can call the Chinese Staff and Workers Association, which is part of the Justice Will Be Served campaign, 212-334-2333.
212-334-2333. Josephine Lee, Leon Chihua, Kei Kikuan, and Feng Xixiai. I hope I've done some justice to those names, but I know you've done justice to all of us. And do get in touch with the Chinese Staff and Restaurant Workers. I saw this from start to finish, and what a great finish it is. Dare to struggle, indeed dare to win. And thank you very much for being with us. We are moving right along now. And another major struggle, there has been mass upheaval of the indigenous people of Cauca, Colombia, which has been met with military force, resulting in 3 deaths and 122 wounded. Rafael Coque, the former indigenous governor of Corinto in northern Cauca and representative of the Association of Indigenous Councils of Northern Cauca, recently testified before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights of the OAS about the militarization of the indigenous lands, the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement, and the failure of President Uribe's administration to honor accords with the indigenous communities, and about the current repression of indigenous protesters in Cauca.
I caught up with Rafael at the United Nations Church Center. Now his presentation.
De Colombia y de las comunidades indígenas, campesinas y afros, un saludo fraternal de resistencia. Me encuentro aquí, pues, para contarles, digamos, de todo corazón, la situación que estamos viviendo allá, que es muy crítica. Lo primero que sucede es que
from Colombia, from the peasant communities, indigenous and Afro-Colombian communities, very warm greeting and a greeting of resistance. I'm here to tell you from all of my heart about the situation that we're going through and we're living through in Colombia right now, which is a very urgent and critical situation. What the first thing that's happening is that the current government, through their policies, are taking away our rights. They're taking away our rights in relationship to housing, education, health, respect of human rights. In addition, the laws that are being passed are in favor of transnational corporations and are excluding us and keeping us in the margins. And that's one of the reasons why today indigenous Afro-Colombian peasants, union leaders are marching on the streets of Colombia to draw attention to this situation. So and we've said clearly we have an agenda of 5 points that we want to focus on, and one is the first point is to reject the free trade agreement, which is stealing all of the richness of Colombia, the wealth. And the second point on our agenda is Plan Colombia, which is being now implemented in 14 regions of Colombia, and is usurping our territory, it's militarizing civil society. And the third point that we're bringing up on this agenda is legislation that damages and erodes our rights, including the rural development law, which basically takes away our access to land and our possibility of having an agrarian reform, and also laws like the mining code. What we want is that these laws be changed and that these changes encompass norms that respect and recognize our rights and continue the gains that we had made through Colombia's constitution of 1991. And this is our call to the government or to Colombia. What we're trying to do is bring communities together, indigenous together, and all social movements together in a peaceful and organized way, a way that proposes a change. We're not guerrillas, we're not terrorists. We are simple civilians, and we are just calling for these things, these points to change. These are the principal reasons that move us today and that mobilize us. We are looking for revindication for all of these things that have happened to us, and what we want is to be heard and to negotiate, but what has actually happened and what the government's response has been is that they've called us terrorists, they've called us guerrillas, they've killed and detained our leaders, they've persecuted us.
Por eso las comunidades indígenas que salieron el 12 de octubre en el territorio de paz y convivencia de La María, ese era el propósito, de visibilizar, de denunciar, de ser escuchados. Pero ¿cuál fue la respuesta del gobierno? Militarización del territorio.
So what indigenous communities mobilized on October 12th was to make visible the situation, to denounce and to be heard, but the response from the government was to single us out as terrorists, to persecute us, and it was a violent response. There are 122 people who were wounded. We have 3 deaths, 1 that died in La María Piéndamo and 2 that died at the point that's known as the Y. It's a point where different roads meet. 40 of the 122 people who were wounded by gunshots. And so we decided that even if they kill us, we're not going to stop. We're going to become more resistant to the violence. So we decided to march to Cali. We arrived in Santander. That was our first stop. That's where we met professors and students, and we talked to them about what we were wanting, and we tried to socialize to help them become conscious and understand what it is that we wanted so that they would join us. Then we went on to Villa Rica, where we met with the Afro-Colombian population and the sugar cane workers who are also on strike right now because their labor rights are not being met. And we talked with them, and they joined us. And we talked and educated them about our agenda. And our objective is to go all the way to the city of Cali, where we'll have a congress of social organizations, and we'll come together and build a common agenda that will make us conscious, conscientize us about our education, organization, so that we can all build something together that we have in common. Building of that common agenda will have, of course, certain responsibilities and work that we all have to take on. Union leaders, students will come together, and the displaced, there's 4 million displaced in Colombia, internally displaced in Colombia. The National Indigenous Organization of Colombia, ONIC, has indicators regarding the internal displacement of indigenous people. They're very high, but I don't have the precise data with me. What we do see is that internal displacement is used as a strategy to gain access to natural resources, The idea is to displace people so that multinational corporations can have access to water, they can have access to the natural resources, and they also can have access to land to plant monocrops like oil palms and sugarcane, which are used for biofuel. The majority of the internally displaced people are from the rural areas, and in the populations, the average of indigenous and Afro-Colombians who are displaced is quite high, but there are many people who are scared to identify themselves as internally displaced, or for a variety of other reasons haven't identified themselves as such. But I do understand that it's quite high because the impact of what's going on in Colombia is felt in the rural areas. We will unite, the poor will come together to tell the government and to tell the current system that there's another country that's possible, that there is another world that's possible, that is, there's a new Colombia that we can build together. And what I really want to focus on, what I really want to highlight here is that my visit is to the United States to tell you directly what's going on in Colombia, because the Colombian media is hiding everything. They're not informing about what's going on. And then when they do inform, they say that we're shooting ourselves, that we're causing our own injuries, and they're misinforming. So when I was here at the Inter-American Commission, I was reporting about this situation and the need for respect and the respect for our rights. But what's the most important thing is that you unite in solidarity with us, that you give us international support, because the only reason why we're still alive today is because of the pressure that has come from the outside. It has been key to stopping the Colombian government from going ahead with more violence, and it has been key to keeping us alive, and we think that's the key to continuing in our struggle. And the other thing I want to highlight is that the social struggles in Colombia are being persecuted, that it's not just about indigenous people. Union leaders are being persecuted, sugarcane workers are being persecuted, and people who belong to the Polo Democrático, which is the left party in our country, are also being persecuted. The sugarcane workers have 5 people who were detained, and in essence, social struggle is being criminalized. That's it. Thank you very much.
And Rafael Coqu was translated by Natalia Cordona from the American Friends Services Committee.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash, and log on to a new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.
buildingbridgesradio.org.